That cold case you're listening to? Nasty stuff. But you know what else is a crime? Missing even a moment of whatever you're doing to go on a drink run. Luckily, there's Drizly, the number one app for alcohol delivery. With Drizly, you can compare prices on the biggest selection of beer, wine, and spirits, then get them delivered in under 60 minutes. So download the Drizly app or go to drizly.com. That's drizly.com today.
92% of households that start the year with Peloton are still active a year later.
All because of a fancy bike?
It's not just a bike. Peloton makes treadmills too.
Eh, all treadmills are the same.
Our treadmills can adjust speed and incline automatically, so you never break your stride. Whether you're squeezing in a power walk or training for a marathon, Peloton can help you achieve your fitness goals. 92% stick with it. So can you. Try the Peloton Tread risk-free with a 30-day home trial. New members only. Not available in remote locations. See additional terms at onepeloton.com/home-trial.
This is the Decibel Geek Podcast with Chris Sinzak and Aaron Camaro.
All right, here we go. It's time for the Decibel Geek Podcast. It's a show about rock and roll and time travel. That's right. I'm your mysterious host, Aaron Camaro, joined as always by my kick-ass friend and awesome co-host. See how I switch that up? It's Chris Sinzak.
Happy October.
Yes, it's finally here. Summer's almost gone. Autumn's upon us. The most metal of all seasons.
Yeah, I would say so.
But yes, we are time travelers, not from the future. We can't tell you what's going to happen. We're actually time travelers from the past.
Ooh. Yeah, but the recent past.
Very recent past, yeah. So today we're doing new noise. And because we're in the past, it may seem like old noise, but it's noise nonetheless, and we're going to make a little noise about it and have fun doing it today. Chris Sinzak, right now in present time, is in Florida on vacation, right?
Yeah, I'm on a beach probably drunk out of my mind.
Nice. That sounds good. I have no idea where I'm going to be, and I don't know where anybody else is going to be, but I know this week everything in the world is still kind of weird, so I'm hoping wherever you are listening to this in the future, things are awesome.
Yeah, we're recording this on the first day of October, but you'll get it relatively quickly.
Yeah, so we didn't want to leave you guys hanging without something. Chris Sinzak, man, he's been trying to go on vacation since the day after Rockin' Pod, and it's never worked out. Finally, it's happening for him. We don't want to leave you guys hanging, so we're going to make sure we do something, so we're recording new noise in the past to bring to you in the future so you don't miss out on anything. So you know that means we don't have any reviews. Surprise, surprise. I'm going to guess in the future, hopefully we do. That means we also don't have any Geeks of the Week. But if I were to guess, I would say it was probably Adam Cox, Rockin' Ron Runyon, probably Brent Tibbetts and Mike Tyler, Cobras and Fire podcast, right? Of course, they're going to share it. Matt Ashcraft, Kevin Williams, Mark and Jerry BS Sessions, Shane Hebert, Keith Rockford, Jay Shablewski. I'm certain you don't got to be Nostradamus to look into the future and know those fine folks have shared it. I'm sure Sit and Spin with Joe probably did. Aaron Baker, I know for sure did. Joe Capone, Wayne Cross, Shea Hargett, David Cathy right here in Nashville, our good brother. Mike Parnell, I'm sure. David Glenn, you know, he shared it. Of course, the Mighty K shared it.
That's pretty amazing. You have quite a
who
recall.
Else? Who else? Oh, Scott Crouch and the
Mooger
Booger. All right.
That's pretty impressive, Aaron.
I'm just guessing. I'm almost certain.
Yeah, it didn't sound like you're reading from a list at all.
Whatever.
Yeah. I'm just going to call you out before Cobras and Fire does it.
Oh, okay. Well, whatever. I know it. I know it's true. So anyway, we want to make sure you guys got something fun. It's always fun to talk about what's going on in the world of rock and roll. So this is probably the quickest intro ever. You know, we're part of Pantheon Podcasts. We're going to talk about them in a little bit. And all the good stuff, Facebook, YouTube. We need reviews. We need reviews. Facebook recommendations. Podchaser reviews. Apple Podcast reviews. That's it. Let's talk about the news.
Yeah, so I was putting together the stories today, and I'm getting ready to fire the microphone up, and I see late breaking news as of when we record this.
Yeah, it's old news to you guys, but
it's old news now. You've all
breaking news from the past.
But you're going to hear our live reaction to this. Diamond David Lee Roth is calling it quits. He's retiring. Put a statement out today.
Oh, man. Why? Why can't David Lee Roth be 20 years old forever?
Yeah, he's, and of course, you know, he put out a 6-minute audio statement, but somebody transcribed some of the quotes. I'm not going to go through the entire thing, but I'll read a few of the quotes that he had. And he says, "I'm throwing in the shoes. I'm retiring. This is the first and only official announcement. You've got the news. Share it with the world." He said, "I'm not going to explain the statement. The explanation is in a safe. These are my last 5 shows." He's doing 5 shows at the House of Blues at Mandalay Bay on New Year's Eve, New Year's Day, and a couple other days in January.
Wow.
So, of course, the cynical question is he only doing this to fire up ticket sales for the House of Blues shows? And then he's going to say, "Oh, I had so much fun, I'm back." Because, I mean, some bands like to do that type of thing.
No, who would do something like that? Kiss, Scorpions. <Yeah. laughs>
I mean, let's hope Dave doesn't go to a car wash anytime soon and have a guy talk him out of it, right?
Yeah, right. Yeah. I hope he does talk him out of it.
Yeah. And then one thing he says, Alex Van Halen and I have been talking. I can't speak for him just yet, but he knows what I'm about to say. We speak to each other constantly, 2 or 3 times a day. We laugh like pirates. Cynical, but I wonder if him and Alex Van Halen really talk 2 or 3 times a day. I don't know.
Why would you say something like that if it's not true? Because then Alex could just go out and go like, "No, we don't."
Yeah, but Alex Van Halen like never says anything publicly ever about anything.
Maybe it's a slight exaggeration meant to just kind of make the point of, you know, Alex and I are in a really good place. We're friends. We talk to each other all the time. It may be weekly, you know. Who knows what it is. But it's good to know that those two are on great terms.
Yeah, I hope that's the case because that makes me happy. But he says he had mentioned thinking about the departure of my beloved classmate recently, obviously talking about Eddie. And he says, "I'm encouraged and compelled to really come to grips with how short time is, and my time is probably even shorter." And he says, "I thought I might have been the first, frankly." And he put a quote that he used to say to Ed. He said, "Hey, Ed, objects in the rearview mirror are probably me." And my doctors, my handlers compelled me to really address that. Every time I go on stage, I endanger that future. And he says, "I know that when I'm in the audience, whether you come out with a ukulele or a marching band, all I ask is you give me everything you've got to give. That's what I did for the last 50 years.
Damn straight.
So he's... it sounds like he's sincere about this, and I don't blame him. I mean, what else does he have left to prove at this point? You know he's got enough money to live on, so what's the point? If it's not fun for him anymore, then, you know, good on you, Dave, for doing what you're doing.
Well, absolutely, and it comes a point in everybody's career where you say, you know, it's time to retire, you know, and for most people, nobody's in the world is getting too upset that you're retiring from your job, you know. But with a guy like David Lee Roth, it breaks the world's heart to know, you know, well, it's the end of an era. And, man, that guy's given us a lot over the years, man, a lot of great music, whether it's Van Halen or solo stuff. I've loved it all, you know. I've followed David Lee Roth from the moment I heard Van Halen. And, you know, when I was young, the Eat 'Em and Smile album was just huge to me. I had it on LP. I played it. Man, I wish I had a dollar for every time I played that album growing up, you know, because I listened to it a lot. And Dave was always just the coolest guy, you know, because we came up in the era of early MTV, and there was nobody cooler in those days on MTV than David Lee Roth. You know, everything David Lee Roth was doing back then was over the top and so cool that a kid like me was like, well, I don't really like Bruce Springsteen, and I don't really like Elton John, and I don't really like the Rolling Stones, but man, that David Lee Roth is awesome. Yeah.
Yeah, he's definitely a legend, and, you know, not that I'm taking a shot, but it's like, well, at least, you know, certain people know when it's time to hang it up rather than, you know, resorting to tracks and stuff like that.
Yeah. True. I don't know. The whole thing a few weeks ago with Gene, what he said about Dave and all that, I hope that doesn't have any effect on it, and I can't imagine that it does.
I doubt David Lee Roth losing any sleep over what Gene Simmons says.
No, but it does got to kind of suck to get dropped off a tour like that.
Yeah, and I mean, I think, like you said at the time when we talked about it, then I think it was purely a cost-cutting move, and I don't know that they meant it as a slight to Roth. I just think, you know, and look at the Kiss stage on the latest leg of the tour. They've removed, you know, numerous parts of that show, and it's just getting smaller as time goes on. So it's like, and they did the same thing in the when the Crazy Nights tour happened. It was really big and cool when it started, and then by the end, it was just nothing. So
by December, it's going to be candelabras.
Even with Roth, I probably wouldn't go see this tour again, but yeah, we got stuck with the Painter here.
Yeah, I was going to say, man, I wish we'd have got to see David Lee Roth. No, we got the Painter. And everybody from here on out is going to get the Painter, too.
Yeah, so I don't know, but
I'd sure love to be in Vegas for them shows, though.
Oh, that would be fun. I wish I could see him one more time, but yeah, I just it's not going to happen, it looks like.
And it's one of those things, too. A guy like David Lee Roth, he can't get up on stage and just sit on a chair and sing those songs. No. And when he talks about his handlers and his doctors and everybody that cares about him going, you're going to kill yourself up there one of these times doing all that crazy jumping around shit that you do. How old do you think you are? And I'm sure they tell him that a lot, because when David Lee Roth's up on stage, man, he's giving it his all, even up to the very end, you know? And so you got to respect him. You know, you got to respect him. You got to love him. David Lee Roth's given a lot over the years. I wish so much I could be at that show. I never got to see Van Halen live, but I did get to see Dave live one time, and he was kick-ass awesome.
Well, maybe, and this is my conspiracy theorist coming out, maybe he saw our panel we did with Billy and Greg, and this is all a ruse, and they're secretly planning the Eat 'Em and Smile reunion tour.
Oh, yeah. I like that story a lot better. Yeah. Run with it.
You heard it here first. We're going to go all TMZ on you.
Uh-huh. Man, I wish that was true. You know what? If those last shows were the reunited band for Eat 'Em and Smile and they were playing that shit in its entirety, I'd have to figure out a way to go.
Yeah, I might actually get pushed over the edge to actually travel for that. But yeah. I don't know. Sounds like David Lee Roth has an opening on his schedule next August, though. So, you know, maybe.
Right on. See, that would be cool. You know, you can still get out and meet the fans. You can still be at Rockin' Pod 2022. Oh, that'd be awesome.
Let me look at second and third mortgages, and we'll see about getting his guarantee covered.
You heard it here first.
Yeah. Yeah. Chris goes into financial ruin. But, hey, David Lee Roth's coming to Rockin' Pod.
Oh man, how sweet it would
Rockin' be. Rockin' Pod 1 week, and then a month later I'm living in a cardboard box.
Yeah. Oh, man, so worth it.
Yeah, so that's wasn't expecting to talk about that till, you know, like 30 minutes ago, but
yeah. Well, God bless David Lee Roth, and we love you, brother. Thank you for all you've given us rock and rollers over the years. All the joy.
All right, so the next story, another person who's taking a break, at least, Troy Lucchetta, our friend from Tesla, you know, recently announced he was taking a break from the band. And I texted Troy this week, actually, but I haven't heard back from him. But because, you know, I'm like Eddie Trunk and I'm friends with him. But yeah, because it's all about me. Yeah, we go way back. You know, we text 3 times a year. You know, he took a break, and a lot of people have been kind of wondering, like, what's going on? Why is Troy not... not playing with Tesla? And Frank Hannon gave a interview recently, and he kind of provided a lot more clarification with Eddie Trunk, by the way. He said that when we got hit with COVID super hard in August, everybody got sick, including Troy.
Oh, man.
And when we finally all got over it, I think Troy realized, you know what, man, I just don't want to go on the road. I need more time. So he's taking the time he needs to pull it together. A lot of people are feeling that way, and I don't blame him. Says, shoot, he's in his 60s. He's been touring with us for 35 years, so he's taking a break. And I don't know when he's going to come back. And thank goodness he hooked us up with our old friend Steve Brown, who's Mick Brown's brother. And I guess Steve has filled in for Troy when he needed breaks in the past. I didn't know that. And he says, but this kind of worries me. He says, whenever Troy is ready to come back, we'll talk about that then. But right now, Steve Brown is really kicking ass for us. Which I hope that's not going to be a matter of, well, we don't know if we want to have you back. I hope that's not the case, because that gave me a little pause when I read that. But I guess the whole band got sick with COVID, and Troy kind of took stock and was like, I need time off.
I mean, I can dig it. You know, we've always said, you think about musicians, and when I think about a drummer, I think, you know, not only do you have to be an awesome musician and a mathematician, you got to be an athlete up there. to be able to do that. Like you said, Troy's getting in his 60s. You know, maybe he becomes like a special attraction, you know, where he comes out and, you know, joins the band on certain special events or things like that. That's a long time to be in a band and doing what they're doing for so long. You can't blame a guy for maybe wanting to take a break. And I think in this case, well deserved.
Ellen, after, you know, and after going through COVID, he might be a little gun shy to want to go out to crowds and stuff. So I don't, and I can't blame him for that either.
Maybe he just wants to stay home and hang out in that sweet-ass studio he was building the last time we went over and seen him. That thing's got to be finished by now.
I think it is, and he's been working on other stuff with other artists. So, you know, he might just be wanting to work on some other stuff, and he's earned that. But, yeah, I don't know, because, me personally, I went through COVID last month, too, and it sucked. And I saw another interview with Frank Hannon. He talked about his, he had very similar experience to me. It was like a month of shit that he had to go through, and that's what I went through. And I still don't feel 100%, but yeah, and like going out there, especially when you're the drummer of the band, that's very athletic work. It's hard to do. And if your lung capacity is not 100%, I got to imagine it's hard even when it is. So best wishes to Troy. Hopefully I'll hear back from him because, we are great friends.
You're sassy tonight. What's going on with you? What are you drinking?
I'm drinking beer, and I'm also starting my vacation, so I'm in a good mood today.
All right. I'm still drinking these Younglings. They're everywhere. Where did all these Younglings come from?
It's Matt Porter's fault.
No, it's Rock and Pot After Party's fault. Everybody brought these things over here, and all this time later, I'm still drinking them.
Well, for domestic beer, it's got the highest alcohol content. So you're moving your way into IPAs. You're going to be drinking IPAs before you know it, Aaron.
I'm getting used to it. I kind of like this beer.
Yeah, you get a good buzz off you.
Maybe I'll get sassy by the end, too.
Yeah, I feel like busting some balls. But, yeah, no, Eddie Trunk's an easy target. All right, so let's go to the next story, which is a little near and dear to us because big news for Pantheon Podcast, our host company.
Oh, yeah, I saw this earlier. This is freaking awesome, man. This is really, really cool. You guys are going to dig it.
Yeah, it's a podcast called The Real Me, a new production from Pantheon premiering Tuesday, October 5th, follows the emotionally powerful stories of young songwriters and performers with cancer who found hope, healing, and connection through music. And it's presented by Teen Cancer America. It's a national nonprofit founded by Roger Daltrey and Pete Townsend of The Who. The Real Me highlights the moving experience of cancer patients in TCA's Play It Back program, which matches them with music professionals to write, perform, and record fully produced studio versions of their original songs. So it's I think Roger Daltrey is going to be doing the voiceover for this.
Yeah. That's really awesome, man. I really like that a lot because it's such an amazing thing they're doing. The concept of it is awesome, you know, because you got these kids that had cancer, they're musicians, and it's a struggle to be a musician, for one, and then two, you're going through something like that. What amazing stories must come from those experiences, and with Pantheon being involved in it, that makes it awesome. The fact that The Who's helping out with it, I mean, this is a feel-good thing, man. I really like it a lot, and I'm proud of everybody that's involved in it.
Yeah, and Christian and Peter from Pantheon have been working on this for a long time, so it's one of those things where they would talk about it behind the scenes, but we couldn't say anything, so I'm excited for them. I know they were ready to burst before it finally came out today about it happening, and that's a big deal. And it's a great thing they're doing here for this. It's always good when it's got a good story behind it. So very excited for that. And side note, I was listening to We've Come For You All by Anthrax today. And did you know that Roger Daltrey sings backing vocals on Taking the Music Back on that album?
I did not.
He does.
I wonder how that worked out.
I believe Scott Ian was having dinner with him. I'm not sure how that got set up, but it was when they were making the record, and he was like, you want to come sing back up? And he wasn't even expecting to get a yes. And Roger Daltrey was like, yeah, why not?
Sure. So, I've always wanted to play on an Anthrax album.
Yeah, so Roger Daltrey appears on that album, on that song. I love that song, too. Wow. It's a great one.
That's cool. I didn't know that.
Yeah. But, good on Pantheon for doing that. That's really cool.
Good guys, man.
All right. Now, I'm interested in this next, in your reaction to this next story, because I know you weren't super crazy about all the guest stuff on Ozzy's last record.
I don't think it was a matter of having guests on the record. It was a matter of who the guests were for me.
Well, I saw this headline today. Ozzy Osbourne's new album is going to feature guest appearances by Jeff Beck, Eric Clapton, Tony Iommi, and Zakk Wylde.
See, now that is good news. I like that. Those are the kind of collaborations I want to see. Don't get your Elton John and my Ozzy Osbourne, but Tony Iommi and Ozzy, hell yes, I want to hear that. Zakk Wylde, absolutely. What are they going to do with Eric Clapton, man? Some kind of awesome bluesy kind of thing? I'm looking forward to hearing it. Same with Jeff Beck, man. That guy's a legend. You know, I'd love to hear what these guys come up with.
Yeah, the Jeff Beck one, I think, is going to be cool because of he does so many off-the-wall solos that if he does some really wacky solos on a song, I think it'll be cool. But Clapton's the square peg in the round hole here. So I'm not sure how that's going to work out.
I've been, you know how I'm a rabid CD hunter, right? And I'm always on the hunt for CDs. Well, here recently, I've been coming across a lot of Eric Clapton CDs at really affordable prices. So I keep finding these CDs. So it's like, you know what? For a buck, I'll give it a try. And I take it home, I listen to it. And every Eric Clapton has at least two good songs on it. But most Eric Clapton's albums only have two good songs on them. Is what I'm realizing. Wow. A lot of blues covers.
Oh, yeah. He loves to do cover songs. You know, it's weird. Like, when I was younger, like, my dad was a big Clapton fan. Loved him. Especially Cream and Derek and the Dominoes. Cream. And yeah. Layla was, like, one of his favorite songs. And I remember I made him real proud when I learned how to play the riff to Layla. And,
nice.
Like, he would like, to play Layla because he was, you know, he loved that song. But, yeah, I really got into him when I was a kid, mostly because of my dad's influence. But I love the Cream stuff. I love Derek and the Dominoes. But then you get into the solo stuff from the 80s. And at the time, I liked it. It was actually like Journeyman and, you know, the song Pretending. And
yeah,
even the MTV Unplugged at the time was really cool to hear those songs stripped down because that was kind of a new art form at the time. And art form as far as mainstream media goes, because obviously people played acoustic guitar for years. But hearing him strip down Layla, you know, and some of those, you know, songs that were souped up on the original albums was cool. And I was very into him at the time because, I remember one Christmas I got Eric Clapton, MTV Unplugged, and Revenge for Christmas together. I remember that. And I listened to both those CDs on repeat forever. But it's weird. I never really go back to his music much anymore. But who knows? But, I mean, I don't know. Ozzy said he does do a solo on the record. So, I don't know. It'll be interesting to hear what he does. It's not that out of whack. I'm sure they've known each other for a long time.
Yeah, and I get to hear Ozzy doing some kind of cool rocked out blues song.
Yeah. And I'm excited to hear that Zach's coming back to do some stuff
on
this record, too.
Yeah, I like that a lot.
So I guess no, Andrew Watt's going to produce again, but I guess he's not going to do the guitar part, so that could be interesting.
Should be cool, man. I think it's going to be better than the last one.
Even though the last one did grow on me over time, I'll even though people skewered me for it, yeah, but I liked it.
Because you love Post Malone so much.
I love that one song.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Next story.
What else we got?
All right, we'll talk about this one for a while because there's a lot of split opinions on this. Did you see Kiss announced the Destroyer box set that's coming out?
I think I saw Julian Gill posted something about that, and I seen it, but I don't know nothing about it.
All right, so there's different, you know, and to be fair to Kiss here, there's different versions of this. It's the 45th anniversary edition of the album. So you can get, for $20, you can get the deluxe edition that's two CDs. And then you can get...
What is it? Like, is it like the original version and then the Bob Ezrin version that came out a couple years ago, or is it something special?
It's special. So, but what I want to talk about is the big, big version of it that's the expensive one.
Oh, there's a Destroyer Vault?
Kind of, but there's split opinions on it if they did enough on this for the price they put on it.
Okay, let's see. I don't know nothing about it, so I'll judge it.
So there's the two CD version. That's $20. That's not bad.
Okay.
There's a 2 LP version for about $40. That's not bad.
That's not bad.
There's a 2 LP limited deluxe edition that comes with like a book, and that's $50. Not bad. But then the one that most people are ordering is the super deluxe 4 CD and Blu-ray audio edition.
Blu-ray audio?
Yeah, which is odd to me. I thought Blu-ray was all just video, but it's the price point is $200.
Okay.
Which is pretty steep. But the let me go over what's in this thing. So excuse me. So Destroyer 45th Super Deluxe annihilates your senses with 4 CDs, a first ever Dolby Atmos and 5.1 surround Blu-ray audio disc mixed by Stephen Wilson. 68-page hardcover book with unreleased photos and extensive liner notes featuring 73 total tracks with 48 tracks unreleased.
Whoa.
Well, we'll get to this. Destroyer's been newly remastered at Abbey Road Mastering Studios. Bonus audio includes the brand new Beth acoustic mix.
Hmm.
Yay. Loads of, although it is Dick Wagner playing the guitar, which is cool. Loads of single edits, demos, early versions, and outtakes like Ain't None of Your Business, plus the 5/22/76 Olympia in Paris concert, which is has been known in bootleg circles for 20-plus years as Fried Alive. It's been around forever. A wealth of exclusive collectibles. Here's where the rub kind of comes in, including a replica 1976 Kiss Army kit complete with original folder and the following items, which it comes with. Like the newsletter, the Destroyer 2 8x10 Destroyer press photos, discography sheet, Gene, Paul, Ace, and Peter bio sheet, Kiss Army member certificate, Kiss Army membership card, bonus items not originally in the Kiss Army kit include that will be featured in it. Kiss Iron-On, Kiss Army sticker. So an Iron-On, a sticker, a Detroit Rock City bumper sticker, a Destroyer cover sticker, Kiss on Westminster Bridge UK poster, 4 brand new 8x10 member photos. A foil flyer, a Canadian flyer, 4 band member trading cards, even more collectibles. Kiss over New York Skyline poster, Kiss Halloween 76 concert poster, 2 Destroyer tour stage blueprints on transparent vellum, Destroyer 1976 replica tour program, Gotham Rock City news, newspaper track-by-track interview in a hardcover book, 68 pages overflowing with unreleased photos, imagery, and the most detailed retrospect, blah, 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 blah. And then the track list.
So those are all things that are in the book, or those are all separate things?
They're all extra, like, tchotchkes that get thrown in.
That's not bad. That's a lot of stuff.
It's cool. And then, but here, the rub comes in with what's on the audio. So
yeah,
disc,
that's the only thing I truly care about is the songs by Kiss that I haven't heard before.
Thank you. And that's the thing. It's like, so you, in a lot of this stuff, I mean, I don't know if you're as geeky about demos as me, but pretty much just about everything on here I've heard already.
Yeah.
It's a lot of demos that have been released in bootleg circles forever. Some of them came out on the Gene Simmons Vault. And then the live Paris show, which has been around since like the late 80s, early 90s, I think. So
unless they've got like good audio of it.
Well,
like that's something everybody revered for a long time and said, I wish we could hear a good, clean version of this, and now they're finally doing it.
Well, that's Julian Gill's point, is we should be happy that we're going to hear crystal clear versions of that. But in my opinion, the jury's still out on if we're going to hear crystal clear versions of this stuff. I hope we do, but I'm worried we're going to end up getting the same demo quality stuff that has been floating around forever that you can get on YouTube. So I'm not ready to pull the trigger on it myself.
So there just must not be any more stuff from back then. Kiss pretty much had their songs, went in, recorded them, released them on the albums. You know, there's not a lot of extra songs. Like, you got Smoke and things like that, but, you know, those have been around. You know, people have heard that stuff forever.
Yeah.
Is there just nothing left? Did they not sit on anything?
I don't think so. I mean, everything I'm looking at on these lists, everything looks familiar to me. There's nothing on here that looks different to me. So, and maybe that's my fault because I like bootleg stuff, but not everybody does.
Right.
So if you weren't a bootleg collector, you might go crazy over this, but.
So again, just like everything with Kiss, it's not for the hardcore fans.
Well, and I don't know that that's fair. Because, I mean, if Julian's right and it's crystal clear stuff, then it'll probably be worth it. But, and this is not me being jaded, but to me, it's like, do we need another damn version of Destroyer? I mean, can't we do another record? Why does everything have to revolve around this one album?
I agree with you there.
That bugs
me. Why not do something special with Creatures of the Night?
Yeah.
Or do something special with Unmasked, even. You know, maybe they got some stuff from that era. But it's always got to be Destroyer. Like, you know, growing up, every time a new Kiss album was coming out, somebody would say, what's it going to be like? And they'd say,
Destroyer.
It's the next Destroyer, you know? Destroyer's not even my favorite Kiss album.
But it for the studio original albums, it's the one most revered by the general public, which is...
Because it's got Beth on it.
Yeah, and Detroit Rock City.
It was their highest seller.
Yeah, but I mean, it's... And they love the, what Bob Ezrin did with them. And I get it. I mean, if I'm in their shoes, I probably like it that much too. But I don't know, man. I you know, and I hope it's a sign of things to come for the other albums. I mean, I would... If there was a deluxe Animalize that came out, I would be all over it, you know, but...
I thought you were going to say Crazy Nights right off the top.
Well, that goes without saying. I'll be a first-day buyer.
Yeah, because that would be cool, too, especially if there's extra stuff on there that you'd never heard before.
I don't know. Some of the argument here is, you know, a lot... There's some fans that are saying, well, I don't give a damn about a sticker or an iron-on or a bumper sticker or, you know, they're like, give me the music. You know, it's just...
Those are the true Kiss fans that care about the music.
Which, that's kind of me. I mean, this stuff, all this extra stuff's cool, but it's... I'm the same way, you know, and I'm very proud to this day of my Thin Lizzy box set that I paid out the nose for, but it's still got a bunch of stuff that I'd never go back to. I care about the music that's on. I listen to that all the time, but...
Yeah.
You're not... I'm not looking at the postcards that came with it. I mean, you know, I don't care about that.
In that case, like I said, maybe there's just nothing left, you know? Maybe there's nothing left out there in existence, Chris Sinzak, that you haven't heard. So the only thing Kiss could do is continue to make new music. Is that what you want?
What, Kiss making new music now?
Yeah, because that's it. That's the only way you're going to get Kiss songs you've never heard before.
If only Gene can sing all of them, sure.
Maybe Kiss should break up and Gene Simmons and Ace Frehley should start a band together.
I just want Gene to get Ryan, Jeremy, and Phil and do an original album.
Well, of course. Yeah. Those guys would be the rest of the band.
Yeah. That's all I care. I'd be happier for that than a new Kiss record, for real.
Yeah, me too. I'd be super excited about that.
Oh, and there's a misprint on here on the deluxe edition on the track listing, because there's a Gene Simmons demo that I know... It's from the vault, and it's called Nightfly, but they list it as Night Boy, which is not a good title.
Huh.
But I don't know. I mean, I remember having a CD of Destroyer outtakes and stuff. And did you ever hear the Ain't None of Your Business demo with Peter Criss singing?
Yes.
Yeah, that stuff was cool. But I mean, if we can get really crystal clear versions of that, then I'll probably end up buying this.
That would be awesome.
Yeah. So we'll see, but I'm gonna wait until it's out where I can kind of sample a little bit. But if it is that, I'll buy it.
But I mean, how good can it get if it's just demo stuff? It's the same demo stuff you've heard. How much more can you do to it to make it sound
well?
You know, you can't mix a demo and make it sound like, you know, CD quality.
No, but if it's first generation compared to the crap that I've had to listen to over the years, I mean,
that's true.
Like the cassette tapes and CDs we bought in the 90s at the record shops, were the 50th version of it that was recorded over.
So. Those were some of the greatest times in my life. To be in Radio Chaos CD store in Stevens Point, Wisconsin, and we go down there once in a while, and he would have weird shit like that. Mm-hmm. And I just remember finding a Kiss bootleg CD collection of different songs I never heard before. It was like one of the greatest things that ever happened to me in my entire life, you know.
I was that way in Murfreesboro here when I started college. It was the year of the reunion tour, and I got on VHS, I got the K-Rock Weenie Roast on VHS.
Yeah.
And one other show. I don't remember what the other, Madison Square Garden, I think. It was during the reunion tour, and that guy got him in, and it was just this old dude at this record store, and I'm freaking out. I'm like, oh, my God, I'll buy these from you. And he's like, that's just Kiss.
Ah. screw you, but I'll buy them anyway.
And then take them back to my dorm room and play them in my dorm room for my roommate, who absolutely hated Kiss and made fun of them every time I played them.
That was back in the times before you could just hit a button and watch stuff. You know, you had to seek it out.
And my roommate was a gay guy, and he was a radio DJ, but he was like 18. You know, he was a young guy, and he didn't know anything about Kiss. But the minute I start playing it, he's like, he saw Paul Stanley, he was like, yeah, he's gay. he would make fun of Paul Stanley relentlessly. I don't know.
Some things never change. People still make fun of Paul Stanley for many different reasons.
I love Kiss, but I love making fun of them too. But we do that with our sports teams too.
I don't want it. I don't want to make fun of Kiss, and I don't want to think bad thoughts about Kiss. And I don't, just like I wouldn't want to do that with the Packers or anybody else. You know, I only want to think good thoughts about Kiss, and sometimes, most of the time, it's tough. They make it hard sometimes.
Debating the negatives is part of the fun experience for me. I don't know. That's just the way I'm built, I guess. So, all right. So I kind of posted about this last week, but I wanted to talk about it on the show because this is, I don't know if you've been following it, but since COVID, you know, a lot of rock festivals have been coming back, and some of them are launching new ones. And have you been following what's been going on the last couple of weeks with some of these festivals?
Kind
of
in the peripheral a little bit. I've heard a couple of things.
Well,
fill me in.
There's different ones we're going to talk about, and some of them are new and some of them are older, but this is basically, there's been a lot of horror stories over what I've seen lately. And the biggest one that I've noticed is this thing called the Blue Ridge Rock Festival that took place out in Virginia. And it would take, we could do probably two or three shows just on this one festival and all the shit that went down.
Really?
Yeah, because it's bad. But I don't.
So who was all playing at this?
Well, let me look that up, because it's more about the fallout from the festival, no more so than the bands. But they had a great lineup for this thing. It was in Danville, Virginia, and it was I mean, a lot of more modern stuff, but like the headliners, you had Breaking Benjamin, Hailstorm was part of it, Rob Zombie, Limp Bizkit, Shinedown, Papa Roach, Five Finger Death Punch, Megadeth, Cypress Hill. I mean, Black Label played it, Testament, Hatebreed, tons of Anthrax played it, a lot of different bands. I mean, the lineup was pretty impressive. Put together by this young guy named Jonathan Sly, and who's done events in the past, but like he has a bit of a checkered history. And I think they've done a Blue Ridge Rock Festival before, but not at this new venue. Was like the first time doing it at the venue in Danville. But man, this I was following it live basically as it was going on, and it was a clusterfuck from day one. I may be wrong on the number, but it pulled something like 60,000 people. It was a lot of people.
Wow.
And it's like a 4-day event. But like they had problems from the jump. I guess he's done it before and he's kind of done everything in-house, but this year he decided to start hiring out contractors and stuff to handle stuff. But they had fuck-ups with parking. They, like, ADA, you know, disabled people.
Yeah.
They had people that were disabled not able to park in the ADA lot, most of it because there was no one doing oversight on the parking lots or the campgrounds or anything, or whoever was hired to do oversight didn't do it. So you had people showing up that hadn't paid for certain things, just taking advantage, and then the people that would show up later that had paid for it were left out in the cold.
Dang.
You had disabled people having to walk like between 1 and 3 miles just to get to the fucking event space on, like, you know, unpaved roads and stuff, and people showing up to camp and they weren't allowed to get in the campground because people that didn't pay for the campground had shown up and took their spot.
Oh shit.
So then they got directed to a off-site campground that had no running water, no porta potties, nothing.
Damn.
And it's like a 3-mile hike to get to the venue. Then I've heard so many horror stories from this thing. And then the event starts, and they have a thing called the Golden Circle VIP, which is like the area in front of the stage. And this is one thing with festival, and like, and I posted last week, note to self, never book a festival because it sounds like such a pain in the ass. So a lot of these festivals are now selling like premium area right in front of the stage.
Okay, yeah.
For like super high price. And so these people are paying for this, but then you have to have somebody at the area by that golden circle to check wristbands, right? You would think.
Right, yeah.
But you've got general admission fuckers just jumping the fence and going into the golden circle area and filling it up.
And who could blame them, you know?
Well, yeah, I mean, if no one's checking and you're, you know, you're loaded to the gills and you're like, well, fuck this, I'm going to go down here and jump in the mosh pit, then you're going to do it.
Everybody else is jumping over the fence, so let's jump over the fence too, you know, and that's how it
goes. Exactly.
You know, everybody's so there to have a good time and see the bands they want to see, and it's not the individual's responsibility to go, oh, that's for other people, you know, we probably shouldn't go in there. No, at the concert, when it's happening, you're going, let's do it.
Yeah, so it's... So that happened. I mean, I'm not, this is just tip of the iceberg that I'm talking about on the show. Cause like I said, I could do three episodes on this one festival cause there's so many fucked up things. Wow. And I'm sorry to laugh. Cause those of you,
yeah, it sounds shitty.
Those of you that got screwed, my heart goes out to you because I feel bad for you. And actually the first day, Aaron, somebody set up a group page called Screwed by Blue Ridge Rock Festival. And it had like, and like 2,000 people had joined it by the end of the day. And so then I joined that group and I'm following, and this is one of those things where it's like a car crash. You can't help but watch. And I'm watching it and I'm following all the news on this Screwed by Blue Ridge Rock Fest, and the horror stories I'm hearing are just ridiculous.
No, it totally sucks to spend that kind of money and think we're going to go have an awesome time. We're going to go see a bunch of our favorite bands. We're going to camp. We're going to have fun. It's going to be great. And then as soon as you set foot in the place, you go, oh, this is all fucked up.
It is. And like the parking area where people were trying to set up their, you know, their stuff, there's no lighting. So you're walking back to imagine walking to a parking lot, which is basically a field with 1,000 cars and it's pitch black, and trying to find your car.
Dang.
I mean, it was just completely fucked up. And I've been following, and like, even, you know, it got to the point where, and then the vendors, the people that were there with the food and stuff to sell, I guess basically the promoter took all of that money, was supposed to take their fee out and then pay the vendors. They, to this day, and this happened like almost 2 weeks ago, or actually over 2 weeks ago, they still haven't gotten their money yet. Like, they haven't been paid at all.
So at the end of the night, when you sold all your hot dogs, you give the money to the promoter.
You get nothing.
And then he's supposed to give you back your cut.
Mm-hmm.
Man, fuck all that. Tell you what, I'll give you your cut out of it, and I'm taking mine and putting it in my pocket right now.
Yeah, and the food lines were bad, which, I mean, that's part of a festival. But there's just all these different stories of horrible things, and then turns out the promoter also was booking a country festival that was supposed to take place like this past weekend, and they canceled it. And they said that because local officials said that because of COVID, they would encourage them to cancel or to postpone it. So they postponed it to March or whatever. And they put the statement out. And then the local Danville health department comes out and goes, we never told them that.
Oh.
Yeah.
So they lied.
They lied. And then now there's people coming back and saying that apparently... I don't know how they got away with doing Blue Ridge Rock Festival, because now the country festival, like, somebody on this Screwed by Blue Ridge Rock Festival found like documentation showing that the city had sent like all these fees and all these schematics and plans that this Jonathan Sly guy was supposed to submit to the city to get approval, and he missed the deadline, and he was supposed to pay something like $500,000 for missing the deadline.
Wow.
Once he missed the deadline, that's when it got canceled. But they blamed it on COVID, but it wasn't COVID. It's because he's in debt right now.
Jeez.
So it's become like this. It's like an onion. The more you peel it, the uglier it gets. And then, like, it's just getting worse by the day. And
I would never, ever put my money behind a festival.
No. Well, and it's going to get worse because I'm going to talk about more than just this one. So
you laugh now, but wait until 60,000 people show up to Rockin' Pod someday.
You shut your mouth. no, I will never book it. And also, we're getting to my next story here. I will never book, especially book an outdoor event ever. Never book outdoors. I mean, my hat's off to people that try to book these things because it takes big balls to do it.
Yeah.
But you're dealing with weather. You're dealing with all kinds of, there's just so many scenarios that could fuck everything up if it goes wrong. And
a lot of variables.
The next festival is Rebel Rock that was supposed to take place in Orlando on September 23rd through 26th. Let me pull up the lineup for that because they had a great lineup also. Some of these festivals have amazing lineups, but pulling it off is different. So this one had Volbeat, POD. Oh, we won't mention Machine Gun Kelly. Ugh. Incubus, Philip H. Anselmo. He was going to do the Vulgar Display of Pantera set. Skillet, Papa Roach, Five Finger Death Punch, Killswitch Engage. The Used, Rise Against Seven Dust. A lot of more of the modern nu metal type stuff. But it's an impressive lineup. If I was a promoter, I'd be pretty happy with this lineup. Hatebreed, August Burns Red. I mean, it's a pretty big name bands here. Pop Evil, Attila. Attila's a great band. If you haven't checked out Attila, check them out. So this one was supposed to happen, and they canceled the whole festival. And their official thing was there was rain the week before the show. And, it rains a lot in Florida. But they canceled it because they said that rain had flooded the area and the grounds weren't safe. And they pretty much blamed the whole thing on the ground being muddy. And, which is what Bonnaroo did. Although we were here in Tennessee, we saw how much it rained before Bonnaroo. There's no way they could have pulled that off.
No.
But this one I've been, so then I started following all the chatter on this one. And there's tons of people saying, it was supposed to start on a Thursday. They did do some stuff on side stages, but I guess the amphitheater where the main stage was kind of on a slope. And they said that the mud got so bad that they couldn't do it. But there's a lot of people that even that weekend were saying, we walked the grounds. We even went by the main stage. It's not that bad. They could have. And, Danny Wimmer, who does Louder Than Life and several other festivals,
which I heard that. I heard Louder Than Life went off real well.
It did. And everything Danny's done, I'm sure he's had issues over the years, but overall, that guy knows what he's doing. And for Louder Than Life, they had rain the week before, and he just blew, he threw $30,000 at it and got hay and gravel and threw it on top of the ground, and they still went forward. But this festival, they just straight up canceled. And so a lot of people are we're not getting the whole story here. And so now stuff is coming out with this one where they're saying they didn't pay the venue. Now they're blaming the venue, saying the venue said we can't go forward even adjusting things, so they decided to cancel. But there's a bunch of people apparently that at least they say they're in the know, saying that no, these guys didn't pay their permits and they didn't pay the city or the venue or something, and there's money owed and that's why they canceled. They're hiding behind the weather excuse. But I feel so bad because, these people, there's probably people from all over the country, if not all over the world, that are paying for airfare and hotel and all this to come in for these things. So Rebel Rock never even happened to even be a disaster. And they're not refunding
But they're not refunding people.
Well, let me see. It says, you can transfer your tickets to next year, which is what they hope for.
Yeah.
And then it has a thing, fill out this form to request a refund, but I don't know, man. A lot of these events, they want to hold your money for a year.
Sure, because they've already invested it.
Right. Well, to me, as a promoter myself, I know how that works. Yeah. And trust me, it goes on it's on a way of smaller scale. I'm not saying I'm up there with these people, but I understand enough to know that, deposits have already been made to these bands, and you know, travel, airfare, all that stuff. There's a lot of money that's probably already well gone that they need to keep in the pipeline. Otherwise, they're going to end up being sunk. So it's not always a case of they're just trying to be greedy and hold your money.
Right.
You know.
Yeah, in most cases, so, that's how it is.
Right. So they have to hold on to that money or they won't have an event. You know, I mean, I do Rock and Pot on a shoestring. So to do it on this level, I can't imagine the stress that it must take to do it. So, all right, so Rebel Rock, who knows how that's going to wind up. We'll find out. I mean, it'll be interesting to see how both things shake out for these festivals. And then the last one I want to touch on is Knotfest, which is the festival Slipknot puts on in Iowa every year. And the main thing I saw from, I mean, it seems like this one went off well for the most part, but a lot of complaints about, I guess they had like one tent set up for water and food for like 30,000 people. So a lot of people complaining of being in line for, you know, 2 hours and having to miss several of the headline acts because they were just dehydrated and exhausted.
That sucks, man. And, yeah, you're waiting in line to get a water because you're dying and your band is playing up on stage. That's awful. I've been there. Festival life is not easy.
No, I'd never go to them.
No, me neither. I mean, not anymore.
I went to Lollapalooza a couple of times when I was younger, but that was Lollapalooza was just about the only thing going in the early 90s. But
Ozfest.
Well, Ozfest wasn't even a thing at that time.
Yeah,
it had kind of passed me by the time Ozfest started. But now with Knotfest, I mean that was the main complaint. But I wanted to give props to our buddy Josh Toomey, who is part of the, as you know, part of the Knotfest media team now. And in between acts, they were showing his interview with Jesse Leach from Killswitch Engage up on the big screen. And
I saw that. That's fucking awesome.
Yeah. And, of course, I had to make a joke out of it because he busts our balls all the time. So I think you saw it, too.
I did see it. It was funny.
I made, like, the crudest Photoshop I could of Aaron and I on video screens. I was like, this is lies. But no, I'm happy for Josh. He's worked hard to get where he is, and my hat's off to him. I'm very proud of him, and also big congratulations to him. He got Jason Newsted on his show. I mean, that's a huge accomplishment.
Yeah, and did a hell of a job, and talked about all kinds of cool stuff that I never knew about half that shit. Like, you know, why do you wear a Metallica shirt all the time? That what a great question. You know, yeah. Toomey asked it.
Yeah, he did a great job with that interview, and I know he called me that day. Well, he texted me like the day before, and he's like, "I'm interviewing Newsted tomorrow," and I was like, "Well, call me when it's done." And he called me as promised, and I could hear how excited he was. And
shit, yeah,
I'm so happy for him. He's worked his tail off to get to this level. So very happy for Josh. So that was cool. But the festival stuff, man, I don't know. I see all these horror stories and I'm like,
Entertainment's having a tough time right now with his festival.
Yeah, he has, I guess it was called Ballroom Blitz initially, and then it got changed to Masquerade after COVID, and then they were supposed to do it this month, and then I think they just postponed again to like March or May. I can't remember which.
It's a tough time right now. You know, even me, you know, I had a buddy of mine here named Marcus that's a promoter, and he was looking at doing some rock shows and came to me and wanted to know if I'd be interested in like emceeing and hosting the shows. And I was like, heck yeah, you know, and we're talking about like bands like Jackal and Enough's Enough and all these great bands. Tora Tora even came up in conversation, and so many other great ones. And I was all excited about it, but then really it comes down to the uncertainty of everything. You know, people are scared. Are people going to show up, you know?
Yeah.
And people want to show up. You know, people are ready to go to concerts again. That's for sure. You know, you look at the numbers of people that showed up at these shows, even if the promotions weren't prepared for that many people, the people are ready to get back out there and start doing stuff again.
Sure. Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, we all want to get back to normal life. I mean, it's been... you know, I know when I look back, you know, like 20, 30 years from now, if I make it that far, you know, we're going to be like, damn, remember 2020 and 2021, you know.
Yeah, the early 2020s were shit, but then it got really good after that.
I hope so. I mean, we need it. We need a break. But yeah, a couple more stories I want to hit on.
I seen that Rocktember Fest that had Sebastian Bach, Warrant, Dangerous Toys, I think Striper, Kingdom Come. I think that one did really good and didn't have no problems.
Yeah, I didn't hear anything negative about that, so I'm assuming it went well. Baco usually goes to that. I need to talk to him, see if he went this year.
Yeah, that's up in Minnesota.
Yeah, but yeah, I don't know, man. The festival thing is, it's a mixed bag. You don't know what you're going to get. Sometimes the lineup is great, but then obviously the concessions or services are bad, or vice versa. But
yeah,
I will not be booking an outdoor festival anytime soon. that's.
When I think about my festival experiences, I mean, I didn't go to a lot of them because it's just such a hassle. You know, you want to go see a band, go see a band, but a festival thing, you can't just go see the band. It's a weekend deal, so you got to look at camping and all that, and are you safe out there? And man, I went to Ozfest 97 when I was young, and I'm higher than I've ever been in my entire life. Good thing I was young, because today it would have killed me. But 97, man, it was such a great time and it was such a great show. And we were so out of our minds for it and drinking and having a good time on top of it. And when it came time that, you get to that point in the festival where it's like, I got to just have a water. All I need is a water. And then you go and you find out the waters are $10 a bottle. And it's like, fuck, I can't even afford to buy a water, I remember that was one thing about Ozfest. I remember at the end when Black Sabbath was up on stage, I remember kind of laying in my chair and raising my fist and being like, Sabbath! So festivals aren't easy. That shit's for young people, I think, But then again, you look at some of them and, people show up for them. But I think, like you said, it's the difference. The Rocktember Fest thing up in Minnesota, that was at a casino. So that was an indoor deal, So bathrooms readily available, that. Bars, waters, all that, Outdoors, it's a little sketchy.
Yeah, the main festival highlight I can remember was it was Lollapalooza here in Nashville, 91 or 92. I can't remember what year it was, but it was some of the main people that played, Rage Against the Machine was on that bill. But the main thing I remember was a bunch of us were watching Babes in Toyland. You remember Babes in Toyland?
I do.
So they were playing, and they weren't very good. They were kind of awful. And they were playing on the main stage. And then you remember in between songs, did you ever go to a Lollapalooza back in the day?
No, never did.
Well, I mean, Ozfest had the same thing where you'd have the main stage and the side stage, and you could hear what was going on the side stage in between the songs on the main stage.
Uh-huh.
And in between songs on Babes in Toyland, we're hearing this really cool grooving metal sound. I'm like, what is that? And we have to go check this out because Babes in Toyland weren't that impressive. So we go over to the side stage, and it was Tool when they were still kind of unknown.
Yeah.
And they were just amazing. And that was, I still remember seeing, that was the first time I really even knew who Tool was. This was before Sober even came out. This was when Opiate was their release.
Well, and that explains, because I'm sure you're not the only one in the world on that tour that had the same experience, and then next thing you know, Tool is enormous,
Yeah. Well, and then when Sober came out, that just broke the doors wide open, which I know a lot of you guys listening aren't Tool's fans, but...
Now I know you've been drinking. When I say Tool's enormous, you're supposed to say, that's what she said.
Yeah, you haven't met my friend Dixie. Her last name's Enormous. Yeah, we've been recording too long.
We actually talk about time travel. We actually had to take a break because we had a major malfunction, and now you don't know it or wouldn't know it, but we actually took a 10-minute break in between. Yeah.
And I drank another beer, so
bad
scene. But now a couple more stories we want to touch on. One kind of sad. Did you hear about Richie Faulkner? Had a heart attack on stage.
I was just talking to somebody about that today. That was at the Louder Than Life Festival, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I haven't watched the footage yet, but somebody said during their last song, you could see him clutching his chest.
Man, what a trooper,
And he finished the set.
He's having a heart attack on stage and be like, no way, I've still got three more songs to go.
That's crazy. Yeah. And I guess they rushed him to the hospital, and apparently he had a 10-hour open heart surgery.
Holy shit.
So it must have been really bad. And
when you hear you know, one of the guys from Priest went down, you don't expect it to be the young dude.
Yeah, he's supposed to be the young, healthy guy. But, you know, heart attacks can hit anybody.
It's true.
But, scary, but, like, it was, you know, he finished the show, and his wife, Mariah, posted about it, and she's been kind of the person updating it. Did you know he's married to George Lynch's daughter?
We had an interesting conversation with somebody that told us that the other day, and that was the first time I'd ever heard it.
Yeah, and they live out here in Murfreesboro, where I live. Wow. In Tennessee. Yeah, I got to find out where they live so I can stalk them. But,
why don't you let them heal up first?
Yeah, I probably will.
Yeah, that's good.
Hey, Richie, I know your chest hurts and all, but let's do an interview. I'd love to do an Albums Unleashed on Firepower with him.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, but maybe once he heals up. But
give him time.
But yeah, I guess he's doing okay. He's stable now, and he's resting, and he's doing okay. But yeah, they canceled the rest of the tour. And I will mention, you know, I posted about this on the Decibel Geek channels, and, you know, we had a couple of people that are like, oh, bring KK back. And, like, I know that that's the knee-jerk reaction, but that seems a little cold to me. Like, you know, the poor guy is suffering in the hospital.
That would
be awful.
Let's
bring KK back.
That'd be like, you know, if your drummer in the 80s had all of a sudden an affliction and you just went out and replaced him real quick.
Yeah, I mean, they're pretty loyal to Richie, and, I mean, he's done a lot for that band. So, I love KK, and to me, honestly, and I'm a Priest fan just like the rest of you guys. Obviously, Andy Sneap is an amazing producer. I would much rather KK be filling in on Glenn Tipton's parts than Andy Sneap. But still, I mean, let's let Richie heal up. And like the band has their reasons for not letting KK come back, so let him have it. But
And on top of it, what an asshole move that would be. You know, your guitar player goes down with a badass heart attack and it takes time to heal up and you're like, oh, fuck it, replace him with the old guy.
Yeah.
That's shitty.
And I mean, I'm bummed out because Priest was going to play here in like 3 weeks and I was going to go. So, you know, and I'm bummed that they're not going to come, but, you know, life happens, you know, heart attacks happen. So I hope Richie's okay and I hope he heals up and they get to go back on their tour because they're doing a 50th anniversary tour.
Yeah.
But yeah, best wishes to Richie Faulkner. Hope he heals up fast. And then the last story.
Oh, I've got one. I've got one after that.
But go ahead and let's do yours. We'll finish with mine.
Okay. So I got one, and you know, being a wrestling nerd that I am, I pay attention to the wrestling news. And one thing that was really cool that recently happened. Bryan Danielson's one of my favorite dudes. He's like the consummate underdog. He's not a big guy, but man, he can do stuff in that ring that looks like it's killing somebody. And big fan of his. And so when it was announced that he was leaving WWE and going to AEW, I was super excited about that. And it got me thinking about his theme music. Because like when you're in the WWE and you got a theme song and you leave and you go somewhere else, you can't take that shit with you. So when he was in WWE, he'd come out to the ring to the song Ride of the Valkyries, you know. Before that, when he was an independent wrestler, he would come out to the ring to the Final Countdown by Europe. And I thought, I can't take that song with him because, you know, that's his WWE song. But man, that would be so awesome to be able to see him come to the ring to the Final Countdown, man. That's but that's not what ended up happening. Right. In an interview, he said, we talked about using the Final Countdown, but it was way too expensive. It wasn't just the amount of money. They would only let AEW play it like 20 times a year or something like that. For several $100,000, you can play Final Countdown 20 times a year. And obviously that wasn't going to work for nobody. But the cool thing about it is his song is kind of a universal song. Like nobody owns Flight of the Valkyries. So he ends up using that anyway. But man, I was kind of bummed out that he wasn't able to come to the ring to the Final Countdown. I thought that would have been super cool. But for $100,000, you can play the Final Countdown, but you can only do it 20 times a year.
It's that money-grubbing Joey Tempest.
It's too bad, too. Really. That'd be awesome. Because they got CM Punk there, and he comes out to the ring to Cult of Personality by Living Color.
Oh, does he? Oh, that's cool.
So obviously they must give them a lot better deal, which is the crazy thing, is because when CM Punk is about to make his debut in AEW, and everybody knows tonight's the night, on Spotify, that song goes through the roof.
Sure.
And so for Living Color, that's a huge boost for them. For people,
they get 30 cents from that.
They get a whole 30 cents from that after all them Spotify downloads. But it's the Spotify street cred, I think, that's where the real value is, I guess. And to say, look at how much our song's getting downloaded today. So I guess maybe, you know, Europe don't care about that.
I'm trying to remember what record label Europe was on. I think Mercury back in the day. But, you know, it's whoever owns it. Right. I guess whoever owns the master tapes. But, you know, it's funny. My daughter's marching band, the Final Countdown is one of their songs in the marching band halftime show.
Oh, I hope they don't play it more than 20 times a year.
Well, no, this team ain't making the playoffs, so they're good.
They only got to play it 10 times.
Yeah, it's like 10 times at the most, but they're okay. But, the copyright stuff is just out of hand, which you and I personally know.
Yeah, that's why you don't hear a whole lot of music on our show anymore.
I tell you what, though, there's so much independent stuff that's good right now that we got to do a fresh blood soon, but we might be able to start doing Radio Suck shows just on stuff that's unsigned right now. I mean, there's so much good stuff that's not attached to major labels now that I think we could get back to doing Radio Sucks even for that.
My dream comes true.
I really think so. I mean, there's even bands that are, you know, well-known bands that are just doing it on their own now. I think
look at that song today. We both shared it. Byron Nemeth's new song, his band, man, it's fucking awesome, you know? They're not signed to no major label, and I would definitely consider that something that if I had a radio station, I'd be playing that song. What's the name of that thing?
You
got it offhand?
Put me on the spot. I put it in the Dropbox because I thought we would play out with it.
Oh, all right.
So I don't know, but we'll tell you at the end of the show.
Okay, cool. So we'll play out with it then.
Yeah, we'll play out.
Sounds great. I'm sorry. I forgot the name. We'll remember it by the end.
All right, so one more story, and because I'm a Ramones nerd, I had to share this because this is a, wow, what a story.
It's only fair. I entangled wrestling in our conversation again. You got to bring the Ramones.
Yeah, so Johnny Ramone's number one Moss Wright guitar, which, you know, the white guitar that he played all the time.
Yeah.
It sold at auction for $937,500.
Wow. Almost a cool million.
Almost $1 million. It's a 1965 Moss Wright Ventures II electric guitar, and used it for nearly two decades. Yeah. Basically played it on every album from like 77 to 96, and every Ramones performance. Wow. It was the guitar. And
does it say who bought it?
1,985 shows. It does not say who bought the guitar.
That'd be nice to know. Like, who is the awesome millionaire that just has to have that in their collection? Because, I mean, face it, if you were a billionaire and, you know, the things we collect, you know, like I collect CDs, I'm looking for dollar CDs. But if I was a billionaire, I could have any CD I wanted and it wouldn't mean nothing to me. But then there's something like that. You know, the number one Ramones guitar. The one that Johnny played all them years on all those songs and all those albums and all those shows and all them tours, you know, the guitar. There's only one of those in the entire world. So therefore, what's it worth? Damn near $1 million.
And it wasn't Linda Ramone that sold it. It was Daniel Ray, who played on a lot of Ramones records and was very close to the band. I guess Johnny had given it to him, but I do have a speculation theory on who bought the guitar.
Yeah?
I think Jim Irsay, who owns the Indianapolis Colts, probably bought it.
What makes you think that?
Because he, well, A, he's a billionaire.
Yeah, well, yeah.
And B, he buys famous guitars constantly. He owns so many rock and roll legendary guitars that I would not be shocked if he's the one who bought it.
I did not know that.
Huh. Yeah. He buys guitars. Anytime a major guitar goes up for auction, he's usually the guy that buys it.
Man, he must have one awesome room at his house.
Yeah. I need to find a way to get Jim Irsay on the show.
Yeah. You know, if he's a big fan of rock music, then...
Oh, he is. He loves rock.
Maybe we should see if we can get him on the show.
It's worth a shot. We'll put an email out and see what happens.
Nice. We don't want to talk about football. We don't want to talk about billionaire stuff. We want to talk about your guitars.
Yeah, but I kind of drool thinking about owning that guitar. That would have been amazing to own.
Yeah. Oh, man, I'd want to plug it in and just one time. Yep. 1, 2, 3, 4.
That's amazing, though. It only had a single coil and a humbucker in the neck. And, I mean, it was like the fat sound that he would get out of that guitar. Pretty much with a – and he usually had it on the single coil setting. It's crazy. He had, like – Johnny Ramone had, like, the craziest right hand in rock.
And I suppose his identity was that guitar, you know, and that's originally, you know, you think of that first album, a lot of guitar players after that be like, oh, okay, no, I got this new thing, this new toy, this, I like this guitar, I tried that guitar. Not him, man. He said that's the sound, that's the guitar, and that's what it'll always be.
No, he never wanted to experiment with other stuff. He just kept what worked for him.
No, he knew what worked.
And actually today, as of this recording, and I posted about it on Facebook, Too Tough to Dive, the 1984 album by the Ramones, today's the anniversary of that album.
Yeah, yep. Definitely not their best.
Nah, it's still a fun record, though. There's some good songs on there. Mama's Boy, War Dog. You know, there's a lot of good stuff on that record.
I don't know. That's one of my least favorites.
Really? That's the one of their heavier records. It's the Richie Ramone era.
Yeah, I don't know. So is that it? That's our news?
Well, you know, I'm going to pull an Eddie Trunk. I just got a text back from Troy Lucetta, my good friend.
Oh, really?
Said,
fuck off, Chris Sinzak. Leave me alone.
Yeah, I'm breaking news. I just said, hey, Troy, just recently heard the news about your break from Tesla. Hope everything's okay. And he says, thank you, Chris. Everything's okay. Just enjoying some time from home. Stay healthy. So
there you go. Just like we called it. He built that awesome-ass studio. Yep. And now he wants to hang out and use it. Can't blame him for that.
Yeah, that's my good friend, Troy Lucetta. We talk all the time.
Well, if he's such a great friend, maybe we can get back together for another Albums Unleashed, huh?
Oh, that's my next text. Once we get done recording this.
Sounds good. Sounds like you got some free time, Troy.
Yeah.
Let's talk about rock and roll.
That's good to me. Well, this was fun. I'm drunk now, but I'll also be drunk on a beach when you listen to this.
All right, I'm drunk now, and I could fairly well be drunk when you're listening to this as well, just in Tennessee.
Come down to the beach and hang out.
I got to work, man. I ain't got no vacation.
The joys of an office job.
Well, good deal, man. This is a lot of fun. I'm glad we got together and did this so that, you know, people didn't have to wonder for another week where the hell we're at.
Yeah, I'm glad we're
in the past.
We're getting back on on a more consistent schedule. So thank you guys for hanging in there with us.
All right, well, rock and roll, and we'll see you next week.
See ya.
Oh, yeah, Byron Nemeth's new song. Man, this guy's put together a hell of a band. Check this out, crank it up, and then go check out the video on Facebook and follow Byron Nemeth. He's got some awesome stuff going on. Brand new music you're going to love right here on the Decibel Geek Podcast. This one's called You Know It's True.
92% of households that start the year with Peloton are still active a year later.
All because of a fancy bike?
It's not just a bike. Peloton makes treadmills too.
Eh, all treadmills are the same.
Our treadmills can adjust speed and incline automatically, so you never break your stride. Whether you're squeezing in a power walk or training for a marathon, Peloton can help you achieve your fitness goals. 92% stick with it. So can you. Try the Peloton Tread risk-free with the 30-day home trial. New members only. Not available in remote locations. See additional terms at onepeloton.com/home-trial.
At The Home Depot, we're dedicated to helping you build the skills that get your home projects done right. That's why we offer free and interactive online DIY workshops. During the live streams, our knowledgeable associates help you tackle your DIY projects no matter your age or skill level. You can learn how to install new single pole switches, as well as standard duplex and GFCI outlets. Register for free at homedepot.com/workshops. The Home Depot, how doers get more done.